This is DreamWords. Tom Corvin by Paul Storey. Chapter 5. Thirty minutes later, the man Mountain returned with a tray that seemed small in his hands, and then suddenly enormous when plonked in the boy's lap as he sat quite still on the bed.
Thank you, but I need...
The giant cut him off.
You'll be leaving in 20 minutes.
He bent down and retrieved a pile of clothes from the floor outside the room and tossed them on the bed beside him.
Be ready.
He turned to leave and looked back again.
You need anything else?
His voice had mellowed, his face softened. But still the sense of menace filled the room.
I need a toilet.
Under the bed,
he said, with something that could have been a smile or a scowl. The door closed, locked, and then the house shook as boots as big as boats pounded down the stairs. Just to make sure he was not imagining it, the boy plonked a tray on the floor and tried the door once more. Sure enough, it was locked. He then peeked under the bed and with a look of utter dismay retrieved a white and chipped metal pot that was obviously his toilet. He looked at his tray and then the pot and groaned. He had no choice. He forced himself to use the horrible thing after isolating his meal in a vacant shelf of an old wardrobe, shutting the door and moving to the far end of the room to do his business. Swapping the meal for the foul pot, he quarantined the object in the wardrobe, retook his position on the bed and gave in to his hunger. The meal was not grand, but it was delicious and plentiful. Mashed potatoes, beef, herbs and spices all lumped together in a ball of mush may not have been his perfect choice in some previous life, but since he had no idea what that might have been, he was overtaken with the need for fuel and shoveled the heap contents into his mouth. Lifting the plate close to his lips, the boy spooned the contents with animal haste into his body. A mug of sweet tea had cooled by the time he was ready for it, and a sudden thirst overtook him halfway through the meal so that he gulped the liquid down in a few seconds. Once finished, he lay back on the bed unable to move, thinking about his predicament. The man had told him he was leaving, said he was to get ready. What was he going to do? Throw him out? Perhaps they were close to a village. That had to be it. He had walked a long way, or at least it seemed like it. Suddenly excited, he grabbed the bundle and put on what had been his old clothes. They were torn and poorly washed, but no longer smelled of dead sheep. An attempt had been made at sewing his fleecy top with white thread over dark fabric. Not very fashionable, but dry, and for that he was thankful. His curiosity about his strange rescuers was quickly overcome by his need to leave the prison. This surely was. The door opened as he finished lacing his trainer. He was about to jump to his feet when he remembered his ankle. He pulled his sock down and searched for the bruise, but there was none. He looked at the man and ignored his unspoken command to move. "How long have I been here?" he asked.
2 days. We need to move. There's a storm coming.
2 days? His ankle would heal completely in such a short time. He was sure it must have been longer, but why would the man lie? There was no bruise, no swelling, and when he stood, there was no pain. He shrugged his shoulders and followed the retreating figure downstairs towards a blustery and unbelievably wet day. There was so much he wanted to ask. Where were they? What was the man's name? The girls. But as he caught up with them on the doorstep, a waterproof jacket flew at him, wrapping itself around his head so that he nearly tripped in blind confusion over a scraggy piece of carpet.
Put it on.
Stepping into the open, he wrapped himself in the yellow-red jacket which fitted perfectly. He zipped it to his chin, his hair already dripping water, his trousers soaked all the way down the left-hand side in a line that matched the direction of the wind. By the time he pulled the hood over his head, the man was hauling a small boat mounted in a rusting frame on wheels down a concrete ramp into the sea. Seeing him struggle, the boy ran to help, but the boat was already there, the rolling surf floating and then grounding the thing in waves of easy violence. Without saying a word, an orange life vest was pushed at him, and he obediently put it on.
"Jump in,"
the man ordered, and stilled the bucking boat as best he could in the deepening sea. Wading to his calves, water flooded his trainers and froze his lower limbs. He grabbed the edge and timed his jump to the rhythm of the lurch, tumbling head first into the fish-stinking slime at the bottom of the boat. The man followed with surprising grace. He took an oar and pushed down on the seabed until they were deep enough for the outboard motor to take over. Pulling the toggle, the engine started first time, and a second later, they headed out to sea. Chapter 6. To be in a small boat in such weather was crazy. The boy knew this instinctively, but at that moment felt nothing but the urge to leave. They vectored right on the tip of land formed from the curving shore that enclosed them in a semi-bay. It was soon evident that the peninsula protected them from the worst of the sea, because as they headed round the headland, the water became a shifting molasses of mountain and trough. It launched and dropped them with terrifying speed up one side of a wave and down the other. The boy sat in the front, white-knuckling the wooden edges and staring down the abyss, while the man gripped a tiller at the stern, eyes unblinking, gazing ahead as though boating in a duck pond. Plunging down each sickening slope, it seemed as though the bow would cleave the surface and continue to the bottom of the ocean, but then they'd level out and climb back up the other side and repeat the drop to near certain death. They travelled along the coastline, but had to go out to sea and then turn and come back again in a sawtooth pattern to avoid being caught by a wave side on. If that were to happen, the tiny boat would be swamped and tipped over. The boy checked the strap on his life jacket for the 10th time. It was still secure. He checked it again. Water sloshed under his feet from bow to stern, from port to starboard, carrying with it a mess of flotsam that included greasy trousers, an old rope, a red fuel can, and a jar of worms. With each plunge and spray, the boat filled and gained weight. The sea crept higher, and the craft sank lower. They had just made a perilous turn back to the shore when the man looked behind him from the crest of a wave and cursed the blackening sky. The storm swept towards them like a lumbering monster determined to hunt them down. Slamming the rudder hard, the man made his first sensible decision of the day. The dinghy leaned dangerously to starboard, seemed to pause on the verge of a mountainous void and then swiveled, just in time for the free fall back the way they came. Amidst the sound of water and wind, the pair remained resolute and silent. They had to get back. They should never have left the cottage in the first place. The shore ahead was rocky, an unbroken line of white surf smashing itself to a fine mist, running from the headland they'd recently rounded and continuing left for the next 3 miles. The storm hit them as they turned to ride the wind into the shelter of the bay. They were 50 metres from the foaming rocks and the same to the tip of the apostrophe marking the edge of safety. They had been running swiftly, the wind blowing onshore, the tiny engine and the rudder carrying them easy towards their escape. When the storm attacked, the wind smacked them in the face, broiled the heaving sea, pushed them away from the calm water that seconds before seemed so close.
"Hang on!"
the man screamed above the gale. Once again, he changed tack, this time pushing as close to the peninsula as he dared, hoping to skim it before the storm pushed them onto the rocks. The boy gripped the sides, watching with grim fascination as a bright yellow plastic crocodile, no more than 5 metres to his left, flew through the air in a foaming wave of white death and slid onto the backwash to repeat the leap again and again. Slowly, slowly, the jut of land and the little toy eased behind them. Amid the thunder of the surf and the raging wind and rain, the scream of the outboard motor as it clawed the water, their pace against the land was almost serene. At last, as the crocodile broke in two, the pitiful craft entered what had been the relative calm on a line towards the cottage. This did not, however, mean they were safe. With the changing direction and sudden ferocity of the elements, the shelter of the peninsula was minimal. When they at last saw the cottage, it was shrouded by a shifting veil of rain. Earlier, as they had left the building, the steady torrent slanted diagonally in regimented lines. Now, each droplet was a member of a swarm, sweeping down and then curving suddenly upwards and sideways in waves that feigned intelligent life. And then there was the girl, staggering along the shore close to the ramp, yelling silently as they struggled towards her. Even the man's voice barely reached them as he screamed himself hoarse.
"Inside! Get inside now!"
A strong gust pushed them sideways and the boat skewed to port, sliding in dreamlike slow motion on down a black hill, the wind immediately changing so they were held aloft, it seemed, by opposing forces. And then it died. Just like that. It was only for a couple of seconds. It died or changed direction. The effect was the same. They hurtled forward and down, the bow slapping hard into the trough, the wooden prow submerging like a submarine in a crash dive. As they hit, the boy pitched forward and involuntarily closed his eyes. And as he did that, he suddenly pictured his own back, as though from inside the head of the man behind him. A hairy hand reached out and pushed him hard between the shoulders. He saw himself lurch over the bow and into the churning sea. The episode, or vision, had flashed through his mind literally in a blink. It was so fast that he'd no time to think about what it was he actually saw. Instead, his natural instinct to survive kicked in and he tried to escape the murdering act. He leant forward as they hit the bottom. The wave washed over them. The boat juddered to a slow crash and everything. The old trousers, the red petrol can, the rope, the sloshing bilge and the boy himself catapulted down. The boy turned instinctively and saw the hand, the man's face contorted by exertion, stretching for his back, and all at once he lost his grip and slipped over the transom to be swallowed by the furious sea.
DreamWorks.com.